celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis.
Kia ora, a really quick pre-intro to the intro. It's been basically bang on a year since Cyril Riley was on Tall Poppy Talk. I often refer back to this episode. He is just so motivational, exciting. When we recorded this, Stumbling In had just started blowing up in Sound of Silence, and now he's just released an original song with James Blunt. So just figured we could all do with listening to Cyril again and hyping him up, hyping ourselves up, and enjoy the episode. It's been fun for me to listen back to and see how I've evolved over the year. So enjoy. Thank you, Cyril. Such a GC. Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have Cyril Riley. He is a producer and one of Australia's fastest growing artists with well over 8 million monthly listeners on Spotify alone and counting. His record Stumbling In is making global waves and features in some of the biggest playlists. His online presence is substantial, and that's due in large part to his prolific pace of dropping these iconic remixes, and also in large part due to his brilliant personality that people easily engage with. He's been on tour recently in Europe, and he has a lineup of festival slots already booked in for 2024. He's a tall poppy, and he's on an absolute mission. He has landed in the pages of Forbes as they recently wrote about his official remix of the Grammy-nominated band Disturbed's iconic Sound of Silence. 6 months ago, he didn't have a passport, and now he's topping charts all over the world through the sound waves with Spinnin' Records, his label. What an absolute pleasure, Cyril. Welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Where and how are you today?
That was beautiful, Grace. I'm really good, and I'm in Darwin.
And for those listeners, we've got some people all over the place. Where is Darwin? Obviously Australia, but if they looked at a map, where are you popping up?
Top end. I think that's what everyone says, just the top end. Did you know that Antarctica from Melbourne is closer? Melbourne is closer than to the Antarctic than it is to Darwin?
I mean, no, because I'm... 20. So what we're painting the picture there for listeners is like Darwin's a little bit off the map, perhaps.
Just a little bit. But it's nice. It's just chill. It's good that I don't really do much work up here. I've got a few festivals up here, but I tour and then I get to come back and with the family and stuff. And yeah, it's just chill vibes. It's good.
And you mentioned obviously you're chilling now, but you've been on the move. Where have you been in the last like couple months?
Oh, it's been like 2 days ago I was in Perth, and then 3 days ago I was in Adelaide, and then a week and a half ago I was in Germany, Paris, and Amsterdam, and Doha. I was only at the airport in Doha. Probably doesn't even count, to be honest, but yeah, I was there. And then I've been in Melbourne. I head back to Melbourne this Thursday, and then I go to Sydney, I think. No, I go to Brisbane. And then and I think I'm in Sydney, and then yeah, I think I'm in New Zealand as well in June, I believe, and then back off to Europe for the summer.
That's just epic, and I know New Zealand's going to be stoked to get you because the festival scene's obviously pretty enticing, but I mean, as is Europe, is there a place that you're super keen to get and like perform?
Honestly, I cannot wait to come to New Zealand. I've been waiting because New Zealand was the first place I sort of cracked the code. I started, like, New Zealand was the first place that supported my music. So to come over there would be excellent. And the landscape looks bloody beautiful. I want to check out the mountains and all the snow and stuff. Hopefully I get enough time to, go out to the outback of New Zealand and check it out. I like the outback of places, to be honest with you.
So that's interesting. And I want to dive in there, right, is producer. And there's a distinction between DJ and producer. What is that?
I think a DJ is the one that will mix the music. And if you're solely a DJ, that person is sort of like a radio host, except it's live. It's sort of like, you go and play and promote other people's music in a club and, hype up the crowd with that music. And it's an important job as well. If you look at Carl Cox, he's a good DJ. He had a residency for years. I think it was, I can't remember what it was, but it was, he'd do a 10-hour set, and to the day he retired from that, he was known as the world's best house DJ. So there's that in itself where it's like you don't make music, but you Carl Cox does make music, but there's certain DJs that won't make music and just play the music and hype the crowd up in clubs. And then you've got a producer, which is you can have a producer that just produces songs and doesn't really tour or have an artist profile, but will like work on a song for a singer and make royalties off that song. Or you've got a producer slash artist slash DJ, I suppose, which is like what I am sort of thing, where I DJ and produce music, plus I play instruments. So it's all just, I don't really call myself a, well, I am a producer, but if someone asks, I just say an artist.
I like that. And sometimes I interview athletes and I call them an athlete because much like you, they cross so many disciplines and you can't kind of define it to that one producer. I did have a question too. How many instruments do you play? Because I saw drums the other day and then this. Can you talk me through like a big question, but when did you get into music and how have you picked up those instruments and tools as you go?
Oh man, I started playing when I was like 2 years old. I got a guitar off my mum and dad. They brought me like a little guitar and I showed a huge interest in that. I used to, when I was like a little baby just starting to walk or crawl, Rage would come on, you know, Rage. So I'd go just bounce around to that. And mum always told me like, oh, she knew that I had an interest in music. Wasn't sure what it was, but yeah, so I started playing guitar when I was like 2, and then by the age of 7, I was like playing it pretty well. And I started playing drums, piano, and then a little bit later, I picked up bass guitar because one of my dad's good friends played the bass guitar, so he taught me how to play that, which really helped me learn where the notes are and stuff on the guitar more than just play the chords. It was it was good. I used to play drums most of all. I love the drums because they're just loud. I really like loud things, I think. So I'd spend 12 hours of the day. I wouldn't go to school much. And when I went to school, my high school teacher would write me a note, and I wouldn't go to English or maths or science or anything. I have no life skills, by the way. I barely can drive. I just, sat in the music room all day long. I teach kids, you know, I'd be in year 8 and I'd be teaching year 11 how to play, you know, drums or in the school when I was about 12, or I think I might have been 12 or 13. I started really diving into the computer and learning how to, you know, make sounds and stuff like that.
Do you reckon, was it one particular teacher, do you recall, who was like, this kid, we're wasting his time with English and math, like he's going to be a muser, he's going to be an artist? Was it just the one?
Yeah, it was my music teacher, Mr. Miller. He was a crazy man too. He was a bit of a nutcase, but I absolutely respect him with 100% certainty. Yeah, he was the number one factor at school that, you know, got me through, or school had, as it was. I really hated school, you know, didn't really care about, you know, I failed everything, but in music I'd always get over 90%, so it was sort of like, you know, no one really questioned why I was always in the music room because I just didn't really care. And if I was in a class and I had to be in that class, I was an absolute shit of a kid.
So keep you in the music room. Well, clearly now, and that's why we're speaking, is it's paid like dividends or whatever the saying is, like you're making significant impact with it. And it's really easy, to be like, oh yeah, of course everything came through and there's this linear line. And that makes sense. But something I'm really fascinated on is like the value of patience and persistence and grinding away at something, because it's mad easy to be like, oh, of course Cyril's here. He was always going to be there. But were there times, maybe more recently, where you're like, oh, shit, this is actually the thing I've wanted is happening now?
I think I always manifested in bed. Like I think it's really hard to pinpoint because I always felt like I was already there. Even without the, you know, success or the radio interviews, I already felt like I was there because I could produce, and I felt like I was an artist because, you know, I have a residency at a club and I'd make an edit and I'd play that in the club. It was never about, and it's never been about trying to get the best views and stuff like that. It was always just, I love what I do. I feel like an artist. I am an artist, and no one can tell me different. I think in that, and then, you know, as a kid when I couldn't play in a club, or when I was just starting to play in clubs and stuff, or I'd go to a festival and I was picking up garbage to try to be in the festival. Like I'd, work for the festival and pick up garbage, or I'd, help out with the stage and stuff. It was like I'd get home, I'd put in headphones and I'd just lay there imagining myself on that stage, you know, playing in front of them people that I've just seen. And I'd get sweaty. Yeah, I'd get nervous. So it was like a really nice feeling. And I obviously now, you know, taking on, you know, the career full time, not working anywhere else and just solely being an artist, it's a lot different. But it doesn't surprise me. I know that sounds like really dicky, but it's like I was like always in my goal and always in my mind that I'm already there. So when it happened, it was like, yeah, I did it. You know, I was always in the mindset of I'm going to do it. I'm going to get there. and I'm going to try my hardest doing it. So I think even if, you know, a song didn't blow up, I think I'd be 40 years old still doing what I was doing when I was 27 years old.
That almost needs to sit and like marinate for a second. I don't know if I want to call that like confidence or knowing, whatever it is that you have. I mean, I've not felt that sense of knowing before, so it's pretty admirable. Is that like a nature or nurture thing, or is that just so, were you always going to be an artist?
I think I was just born for music, honestly. I don't know anything else. Like, you know, I've had trades, I've worked as a baker, and I just sucked at everything. So I was like, the only thing I'm good at is sitting at a laptop or, you know, playing for a crowd. So, you know, it's it's like now it feels really good now, because it's like, you know, I've done the hard yards for 15 years to try to get to this point. And now when I'm in the studio, it just feels like, yeah, this is where I'm meant to be. I feel like I'm exactly where I'm meant to be.
So you mentioned today before we started recording that you're doing so many interviews. This is one of literally a string. Do you feel antsy? Like, oh, I could be doing something. Like, obviously it's good to talk to people, but do you feel this need of like, I want to be making music? Is that like, I know that's a really roundabout way of asking it, but yeah, how do you feel?
Well, at the start, when I first done the interviews, I'm like, No, I've always thought, like, since doing the interviews, I'm like, this is a part of the journey. So to me, I'm doing exactly what I need to be doing today. If you know what I mean? Like, you know, I'll finish this interview and I'll be straight into, you know, making songs. And then this afternoon when I've got more radio interviews, it's like, this is a part of the journey. And I feel like it's so important to talk to people. And now it's sort of like you know, it started a good journey. I want people to feel inspired. I want people to know that, you know, they can reach out to me anytime they want, because I like to teach. I like to inspire. And I think this is completely a part of the journey, and I feel good about doing anything I'm doing, to be honest.
Well, such kudos too, because when I first messaged you, you were literally, I want to say, in Amsterdam or about to go out in Berlin or something like this. And I've, you know, shamelessly, as one does, like, send Cyril this message thinking like, oh, odds he reads this is low, but got to give it a go. And pretty quick, it's like, hey, Grace, like, super positive, reach out to, you know, so-and-so. Mm. And off we are. And then a couple of weeks later, we're having this conversation. So the fact that you are still able or keeping on top of that connection you have with, like, your fans is awesome. Is that getting harder as maybe like the fan base grows?
It is definitely getting harder, but I try to put it in my day-to-day to, you know, try to get back to as many people as I can, and I'll have, you know, 200 requests in my inbox, and I'll try to get to every single one of them, and then 10 minutes later it's back up to 200 now. So that's, you know, it's getting a lot harder, but I'm trying my best. It's, yeah, but it is getting a lot harder than it was, you know, even 2 weeks ago. So yeah, every day is going stronger, but yeah, I'm trying to hire some people to sort of look after my socials and sort of, you know, basically run it past me, be like, you know, oh, this person message, yeah, sweet, no worries, and then, you know, keep the flow going, because I want everyone to be replied to and heard. You know, everyone deserves a reply, really, because, you know, if I didn't have anyone following me or messaging me, then, you know, still be making music, but, you know, I wouldn't be on here, you know.
Yeah, there'd be less ears potentially on it. I actually listened to, you were on Kyle and Jackie O, which, if you don't know, is like a huge Australian radio station. And you talked about how your handle, it's your boy Sizz, is that it? You can't change it.
I can't now, because of the meta profile. It's I tried to change it a few weeks. I wanted to change it at the start. And me and Luke were like, Luke messaged me like, why is it It's Your Boy Sizz? We should change it to like something that fits into, you know, everything else. I'm like, yeah, no, I tried to change it, didn't work. And now, you know, everyone, I've got too many followers and stuff. If I change it now, I'm going to get lost in the algorithms. It's just It's Your Boy Sizz now. That's what I got to live with.
What did you change it to?
I don't know. I like It's Your Boy Sizz. It's funny.
Yeah, I mean, what got you here is going to keep you going. I think it is iconic. To change wheels a little bit, because this is important, and I want to paint a larger picture. You're clearly an artist. We've really honed in on that. But if we were to describe, like, if you were to describe yourself, and we excluded that word, artist, what are the other traits? What else is going on?
Oh, mate, I'm a father. I've got a six-month-year-old son. I've got a fiance. Honestly, I don't know what else I am. I think any spare time in the studio, I like to crack a joke when I can. Yeah, I like to eat lots of food. I've got to get back to the gym after speaking of that. I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm just, I like to go fishing. I'm a country boy. I really like to go fishing and I like to go down to the local for a pub, for a beer. Sorry, not for a pub. Yeah, I'm pretty average sort of dude. I don't really do much. I go fishing when I can, go for a beer, and sit in the studio.
Wicked. Also, congrats, new father. That's pretty cool. You must be tired on top of everything.
Honestly, I've got the best missus in the world. She looks after MJ when I'm tired. And yeah, we've got a pretty good lifestyle of like, she'll get up when I get up, and I'll go into work and she goes with the baby and MJ. And then, yeah, in the afternoon, I'll take MJ. And it's good. It's just, it's a good flow. I think, but I think I work too much.
You're also working to create something, so it's there's no like work-life balance because you are living and breathing the thing that you're doing. So I think that's kind of tricky. Son, does he enjoy the remixes? Is it like a calming sleep lullaby?
Times he'll get into it. It's not very calming, but he'll be laughing and giggling and stuff. And I'll bring him, he loves the lights. So I've got like lights around my studio for the videos and stuff, and aesthetic really. So it feels nice in here. But yeah, he'll like just stare at the lights. I play music and he's just, yeah, absolutely just mesmerized by everything in the studio. I don't know what it is. It's pretty messy all the time. So. But yeah, he's a little legend. It's been good though. I think before me and my missus had the talk, like got completely together, we had the talk of, I'm probably going to tour, probably going to work a lot. If you can accept that, then, you know, we can sort of be together. But and that was before anything happened. It was like I was just managing a venue. So, yeah, we always had that good chat. And, yeah, it all worked out. So it was good.
Well, that's wicked. Having that support system around you, I can imagine, it gives you that extra oomph when you're doing what you're doing. Like, almost like I can't wait to go home and, yeah, like, spin a yarn about what I've been up to. It's an extra, extra motivator. So kind of, like, centering back to what my podcast is really about, like, discussing this concept of tall poppy syndrome and maybe people's interactions with it, not to harp on about like the negative elements of it because they are there, but more to focus on celebrating people's success and like what's going well and maybe learning from that. Firstly, are you familiar with the term tall poppy syndrome?
Yeah. I'm familiar with the negativity of tall poppy syndrome, more or less.
Could you? No right or wrong answer. It's your boy Scissor's version of it. How would you describe tall poppy syndrome? And secondly, like how have you experienced it?
In the negative or positive way?
Both.
I think the negative way, if you're an egotistical prick. Is it okay if I swear on this?
Or... Yeah, 100%. Yes.
Okay, so if you're an egotistical prick, then you're a negative tall poppy sort of dude. If you're not grounded, you know, you treat people like shit and you think you're absolute top tier shit, that's negative. I think that's, you know, that's how an artist can just drop down and, you know, have no career. And, you know, some people make it, but you won't have a long career because, you know, you talk to people all the time. If you're a negative sort of guy and, you know, don't give people the time of day, I think that's where that can be negative. But I think on the positive side, I think of like learning about tall poppy syndrome and stuff. I think it's like, you know, you can learn to inspire people by being a grounded, no ego, grounded, completely yourself, just, you know, have something good happening in your life, but not changing anything about yourself. I think that's where it can be a good thing.
I really enjoy that response. For you, as you grow and as more you get more listenership and clearly have a real like strong presence on social media, part of that tall poppy too is like negative comments. Like we have keyboard warriors. Yeah. Unfortunately, no matter how brilliant you are, those, for whatever reason, people don't have better things to do, might come through. Do you engage with any negative comments at all, or is it more about the positive?
100% on negative. I always engage with any sort of comment as much as I can. Sometimes if I can see it's just someone trying to get likes off, you know, a current post I've just put out, and you can see that it's like a string of negative comments throughout, you know, 20 videos, and I won't give it any attention. But if it's I think some negative posts can actually be insightful as well. If someone's saying, oh, you know, this one's got this about it that I don't like, then I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. If it gets a lot of, if that comment gets more likes than I expected, or if it gets, you know, 100 likes or something, I'll take that on as, all right, the ratio is people are still liking the remix, but that part there, people agree that that part isn't a good thing to have in the remix. So I'll take that thought to account when I make the next remix. Or, but I don't try to feed into like, you know, but I won't get angry about it or emotional about it. It's more about just reading the comment, either moving along or reading the comment and, you know, taking it in. But yeah, you can sort of see where, like, obviously I make house music, so sometimes all the beats are the same because it's a house beat, you know what I mean? Like, it's a hat, it's a kick, it's a snare, it's a clap. And, but they've all the remixes have different samples and stuff. But you can see, like, two or three people that will say that sounds the same because the trend of that comment is getting 10 to 20 likes on a post. They want them likes. So I won't engage with that. I'll just be like, you know, yeah, obviously it's house music. I'm a house producer and this is my... The way I see it is like, you know, a singer has a voice. Of course, the songs are going to sound the same to an extent because it's her voice. And she has a style, or he has a style that they would like to listen to or perform to. So I think it's the same for an artist, that you know, a producing artist, is that, you know, we have a sound. You know, we've made an artist's career out of a sound we've made. So I think that's, yeah, I think it just depends on the comment and what they're trying to get out of it. If they're trying to get out of, you know, being heard, then they're going to be heard. I'm going to read their comment. I'm going to try to reply. If I can find a way to reply that's in a positive way. If I don't reply, then I'm just going to take that on and try to do better next time. But in positive ways, of course, it's nice to read positive comments as well. But I tend to focus more on the controversial comments, if you know what I mean. If, like, someone's just saying, this is a great remix, I'll comment back, thank you. But if it's a thoughtful comment that I can see that has thought put into it, it could be funny, it could be negative, it could be controversial, then I think they're the comments that I'll mostly read into.
That's so fascinating, and I honestly didn't expect that response. I think, that shows the difference between you and I, right, is I'd be like, oh no, like maybe overthink those comments, but you're so right, you're creating something, and the way you're going to know if people are receiving it well is when they give you that feedback. So you actually really want it, and to your point, it needs to be thoughtful, not just trying to like get likes on a comment. Yeah, I didn't expect 100%. That, so thank you for that response.
Anytime. Like that. I used to be emotional about comments.
Can you talk to me? Yeah, talk to me about that.
At the start, you get butthurt. You'd be like, oh shit, I'm terrible now. Like, oh, people don't like my stuff. Of course I can hurt you, but it's about pushing forward. And I talk to a lot of other artists and about that. Some artists would say, oh, I don't even read the comments. Or if I read the comments, I'd feel like shit, I wouldn't read them. Some artists said, oh, you should take that on. And I think the people that said take it on or read the comments and take it to your own respective are the more the ones that have grew a bigger presence online, where people are reading into it without emotion, sort of thing. You read into it as a learning perspective rather than a emotional perspective.
And how long do you reckon it took you to make that kind of transition from the emotional to the more learning perspective?
I think I'm still transitioning. Sometimes it can still affect you that you're in ways you would not like to affect you. And sometimes I can find myself deleting a comment. I'm like, I don't want to read that. But then I feel really guilty in myself for deleting that comment. I'm like, I don't want to, you know, mess with anything. I think it was like the transition's getting better now. Like lately I've been just reading the comments. I'm like, ah, oh, cool. Or I might, because I like to reply to as many people as I can. Because I feel like, you know, they deserve to be replied to. They've just, you know, to talk to you. It's like seeing people on the street and they talk to you, but you don't talk to them. You know, I don't want to be like that. So I try to talk as much as I can. But yeah, still, I think it's always a learning curve. I think sometimes there's been some really mean comments out there. Like there was one a few months ago, it was like, your baby's shit and you're going to fail in life. And, you know, people try to really get it at you. I think that was like the worst one I've ever seen. And I didn't even delete it. But I'll tell you what, he got attacked online. Each of my fans, buddy, yeah, really ripped into that poor bloke. But yeah, I think it's always a learning curve. You never know what you're going to read.
I love that you say your fans are like ripped into them, as they bloody should have. And the fact that now you have so many people who are on your team that when they see shit like that, it's like, that's the chopping down. So that's the tall poppy stuff I'm talking about too, is like seeing someone's success and just for whatever reason, yeah, bringing up your kid. Like, why is that relevant? They just want to hurt you.
Yes. Jealousy and stuff, you know. And, you know, it doesn't really... When I read that stuff, I'm like, you're an idiot, mate. Like, I look at it, I'm like, that's just bloody ridiculous. Why would you say that about someone? If I've seen that, you know, you wouldn't say that to someone in the street. Why are you saying it online? But it's, yeah, after that, I think that was the one I'm like, you know what? These comments are like, there's going to be haters now that, you know, I've got a following now. And that was only about 100,000 followers. So now I'm up to, you know, 500,000. And it's like, I don't really, it's funny now because I've sort of stood my ground and still posting content, you know, even when I've had a week of, you know, bad reach or, you know, not as much as I had 2 months ago, I just keep posting and trying to do better. And I think it's really put me in a place of, you know, I've got a good foundation of a fan base now. And sure, still when something goes bonkers, like really viral, I get some bad comments, but I don't really care about it anymore. I just read the good ones, read the controversial ones, and read some negative ones, and sometimes comment back to it, and sometimes leave it. Just depends on the day.
Yeah, and you've got bigger fish to fry, obviously.
They just want a reaction out of you.
Yeah, and they're not going to have it. So we've danced around it, but something too, right, is you've had some really notable songs or breakthroughs or things that have just like absolutely blown up. Stumbling In, the Sound of Silence remix. Essentially, like for you, what was that experience when you realized, like, yeah, because you've always been making music, you've been putting it out there, it's been well received. But was there like a day or a moment where you're like, this song's popping off? And what did that feel like?
Oh, the rush of endorphins was crazy. It's unmatched. I remember I was in the club. It's really funny you say that because Stumbling In went viral on the night. Jess went into labor. So it was the night of blowing up online and becoming, you know, more of an artist and a well-known artist of like, I think it was up to like 6,000 likes. I said to my mate, I'm like, dude, this is blowing up because I only had like 500 followers at this point. So yeah, I was like, this is going good. He's like, yeah, shit, yeah. And then like an hour later, it's up to like 20,000. Jess messaged me and said, hey, I think I'm going into labor. So dude, I'm like, I raced home, you know, left the club. And it was on a Saturday night. So then I got back, we went into labor. Yeah, Jess like stayed at home for way too long and we got to the hospital and 20 minutes later, she popped out the baby. That was full on. And then, we had to stay there for a few days. MJ got jaundice. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like basically like they're really yellow skin and stuff. Yeah. And now the positive and negative types are fighting each other. So they just makes you yellow. And then it just, you put your baby under a blue light at the hospital in intensive care unit. It's not life-threatening, but if it's not rectified, it can probably be life-threatening. But yeah, so then I'm like in the hospital and at 8 p.m. in Darwin, the males have to leave. Anyone has to leave except the mother. So wow. The mom stays. And then, so I'd be like there for like 12 hours of the day watching my shit blow up. And then like, I remember there was one day I had to make a video in the hospital because I'm trying to post every day, still follow it up. And I'm back home at 8 p.m. tired as, far out. If it ring, it has nothing on how tired I was. It was ridiculous. So then I'd get back though in the studio, punch out a few remixes. Like I make a remix pretty quick. Sometimes it takes 2 hours. Sometimes it takes 15 minutes. So I'm just pumping out these remixes. I'd be in the hospital trying to find more and shit while Jess is sleeping. And then just making more videos, following it up, part two, part three, part four, classic remixes. And then, the next week, next minute, it's just like in a week, it's like 100,000 followers. You know, the soccer team in Germany posted Stumbling In. That got like 10 million likes and a ridiculous amount of views. Yeah, and then it just kept going on. Then I dropped the Celine Dion one like a week later. After we got back, it was sort of chill. I had a few days off on the weekend and then just got right back into the remixes. Done the Celine Dion one. That got like 250K and just kept potting along. And then by the time you knew it, I was up to like here now, I suppose. And then next minute, I was signing a record deal. After Stumbling In, after I dropped Stumbling In, while I'm in the hospital, I'm getting hit up by record labels. I thought that was spam. And so I'm like telling them to piss off, basically. Like in my head, I didn't tell them a message. So I'm like, that could be real, but I'm just going to not reply because I think it's fucking spam. So then, Spinner Records reached out and I've always wanted to be signed to Spinner Records. I'm like, I'm going to take a chance here. Then I started replying to everyone else. Then I had a legal battle because the bloody copyright of Stumbling In's with bloody Universal and I just signed it with Warner Music and with Spinner Records. Spinner Records is a company from Warner. So Warner's the parent company of Spinner Records. So yeah, all the rights with Warner. So then I've just had to, it was so much work. And then yeah, sign the deal. And then next minute I'm signing a deal with my manager. And then next minute I'm in, it's just been nonstop.
And what's cool though is your son is like a time measurement of how long this whole thing's been going on. So
literally.
He serves as that. That is freaky. I don't know whether you're into signs or whatever. That is such a cool story. That's insane.
Yeah, I love it. It was a crazy time. It was mayhem. And then I had to go back to work. Oh, what is it? Sorry, I had to go back to work a week later after stumbling in dropped because, you know, I had a weekend off and like a week and a half off, but like I only had a week of pay come in without working. So I went back to work and I've got just a newborn baby at home. I'm starting this artist career. I'm having to work. So I'm doing like, and I was also managing a pub. And yeah, this is all going on until about 3 weeks ago when I quit my job and become solely an artist. So yeah, it's just been absolutely nuts. I say that it's a fun road and it is a bloody fun road. I've had so much fun so far, like doing this stuff, bloody, you know, being on a plane, you know, meeting people, you know, playing on stages and stuff. I haven't actually played on many stages yet, to be honest. I've got stuff coming up, but it's been more like promo and talking and stuff, which is really fun. But, you know, all this stuff is happening, but it's just been before that, you know, prior to three weeks ago, bloody hell, it was like doing five things at once, trying to make music, content, sign deals, meetings, radio, work on the pub, work on the club, you know, DJ on weekends, be up till 6 a.m. in the morning counting tills and stuff. It's just, it was crazy.
Yeah, crazy is such a great word for it. Good on you. I'm so impressed, as I know I would be, and I'm conscious of our time, so I'm going to continue questions. I could talk to you forever. All right, what do I need to ask you that I'm going to kick myself later? Okay, so you go on tour, you're back now, and there's some things in the pipeline sort of this year. We know we're going to New Zealand, we're going to Europe. In terms of songs, like, that you're going to drop remixes, is it always that you put it on your socials first and garner a reaction and then put it out?
Yeah, it's like my archive file. I find TikTok and Insta to be like an archive file, but instead of just sitting there, I can see the ratio and reactions to what that remix could do on a streaming platform. And it sort of shows record labels as well. So like with this Sound of Silence, the record label didn't want me to release anything till mid-year because, you know, someone then's doing so well. So that was sweet. We're like, okay, no worries. But then I put that on YouTube and SoundCloud, which I'm allowed to do because I'm not making money off that. I'm just putting it out there for the world to sort of adjust to and see how to go on a platform as a full thing. And people stole it. So we had to get it out. So sometimes, like, it stole it and put it on Spotify. It went to number one in Germany on iTunes charts, like, in a day. So record labels just bloody scrambled, like, we've got to get this out, we've got to get this done, this done, this done. So out of trying to do all my jobs, I've then got another job of trying to get all the masters done, all the bloody, you know, all this conversations of when it's going to drop, how we're doing the promo.
Dude.
I flew too close to the sun. I made an absolute banger. So now it's the official Sound of Silence remix. Like I mentioned, it was in Forbes just the other day. They were writing about,
I can't believe I'm in bloody Forbes.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I found out, yeah, the other day. Like, they put it in there. We've got like a group chat with my managers and stuff. They put it in there. I'm like, what the bloody hell? I'm in Forbes. That's crazy.
Yeah, you're like the front of the stanza or paragraph. It's like, Cyril, Australia made this remix, and like Disturbed themselves are like, holy, they're super relevant, always have been, but now they're just like hitting a whole new area. So that's freaking cool.
And they're so nice. I met them on last Sunday. They are beautiful people. I love Disturbed.
Really? Are they in Australia?
Yeah, they were in Australia. I think they're wrapping up. I think they got one more show maybe in Melbourne or Sydney. But they done a headline, like ticketed show in Adelaide, and then they had some festivals to play in Sydney and Melbourne. So I went down and met them on Sunday, last Sunday. Yeah, in Adelaide. And I was like backstage with them, just having a couple of drinks and stuff, and yeah, talking about everything. And yeah, they're funny. They're bloody awesome. I really enjoy their company. And yeah, had a couple of glasses of champagne, and then I jumped on a plane, came back to Darwin, got off Darwin flight, had a message saying, hey, you're going to Perth in like 8 hours. So then I jumped in my jammies, had a quick bloody shower, had a little sleep, jumped on a plane, went to Perth, and met Susie Quattro. She was absolutely brilliant. And they're just so they're really good performers. They've been in the game for so long, but they just really know how to put on a performance. And it was so inspiring to see what they can do still after 20, 30, 40 years being in the game.
And that's the aspiration, right? Like, you're at the, you've been doing this for 15 years, but you're at the start of, you know, knock on wood, a bloody long career. So you see that.
Yeah. And you look at them, like, they're sort of the same. You know, most artists have been curating the sound or working out how to do that instrument well enough to be in a popular band or a popular act. So, you know, pretty much, I don't think there's many artists out there there's a few, but the ratio of artists to blow up straight away to the ratio of artists blowing up 10 years later is there's a lot more, you know, having to learn and stuff and, you know, yeah, it's insane.
Wow. Okay. And you're literally so interesting that anytime we talk about something, you're like, oh, and you have this crazy story about your son being born the same day Stumbling In goes out. So I'm almost like, shit, what am I going to... Okay, what haven't I asked? Or what's a story that you're like, oh, this is a real goodie that we haven't talked about that should be on the record?
Jesus. Far out. I don't even know, to be honest. I can remember the first time I went on, I wanted to go on stage and how heartbroken I was when I couldn't go on stage. I was like 10 years old and I wanted to play the guitar with this band. There was like 50 people there. I was like, this is a fucking festival. And I couldn't go on stage, so I bawled my eyes out. I don't know why I thought of that story.
Why couldn't you go on stage?
Because they didn't put me up. They're like, oh, you know, we'll think about it, but we didn't do it. I'm like, sorry about that. I was like, oh.
That came to mind for some reason, though, didn't it? You just wanted to tell someone.
Yeah, I never told anyone that, but I was pissed off. I was pissed off 10 years ago, 10 years old.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, what, 17 years ago and still think about it?
Yeah, sometimes. I was just trying to think of a story. I'm thinking about stories that are a little bit illegal, but I can't really say any of them. And I got some funny stories, but I'm trying to think of a story that's relevant. Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's so okay.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just spin a little yarn. And if you come up with something, you let me know. It is so exciting to be talking to you right now in this moment in time because, like you said, you're only 3 weeks into doing this full time. And you've already accomplished like incredible feats while to your point, you were doing 5 different jobs at once. So to be able to talk to you now on the start of like this epic freaking journey, just thank you. It's a real gift for me. And that's why I'm like, I just want to ask you everything there is, but super impressed and just stoked that you're making the time. And that is major testament to the personality you have, because like you said, you've got a kid, you're trying to put new stuff out, you're doing all these things, and you still take the time to talk to me. Like, that's going to go so far.
No, I really appreciate your time, to be honest with you. I wanted to do a podcast for a while, and yeah, I really appreciate you having me on.
Okay, sign-off question. This is going to be interesting. I asked the same one. I asked 2 questions, so I'll actually give you a choice. Because recently, my sign-off question has been, if you had to listen to just one artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be? That's tricky because you literally you do this. Who would you say?
I have no idea. You know, the thing is about artists is that I could say right now, I could be like, Fred again. I'd listen to Fred again my whole life for the rest. Because, you know, I've been into Fred again lately. But in 6 months, that's going to be completely different. I'm sure I'm still going to love Fred again in 6 months. But there'll be a new hot shot, new guy out there or new girl out there that's just absolutely fucking smashing it. And I'll be like, I want to listen to that person for a bit. So it's really hard. It's like, damn. Like, I'd probably have to choose someone, like, in the 70s or 80s. You know, like, someone that's, like, just, like, someone that I've never got sick and tired of. You know who I really love is Shannon Noll, honestly. I know that's a silly one. Because it's, like, that was the first concert I went on to when I was 5 years old. He just lost Australian Idol, but he came out to it. So he's where I'm from called Yuwabalong. That's the place I'm from.
Yeah.
And about 45 minutes out of Yuwabalong, there's Condobolin. So that's where Shannon Noll grew up. And I met his brothers and stuff. They used to come out to the pub. So the reason I'm pretty good at guitar is because every day after school, when Dad wasn't out camping for work or, you know, on the weekends, I'd be down at the pub with a couple of guitarists and singers, and I'd play the guitar, like 14, 15 years old, sitting down there, sneaking a quick, you know, beer, and playing the guitar, playing a bit of country music, like, you know, Alan Jackson, Randy Travis, you know, all the old sort of classics, a bit of Slim Dusting and stuff. But yeah, so Damien Noll, Damien? Far out. I really hope I didn't get that wrong. But yeah, he used to come out in his Harley on his motorbike and come out and play guitar as well.
So cool.
And yeah, it was sick. But Shannon never came out. He was, you know, too busy conquering Australia, being the number one idol in my eyes. And I remember I was 5 years old. I was living in Lake Ejeligo, which is like 20 minutes from Yuwabalong. Sort of mum and dad split up. And yeah, it was like 5 years old. And I was watching Australian Idol, and Mum came home and said, "Oh, mate, I got you something." I'm like, "What'd you get me?" And she pulled out the ticket, and I fucking bawled my eyes out. I was like, "Oh my god, bloody Shannon Noll ticket!" I was like, I nearly fainted. I was like, "Oh my god, I'm going to see the biggest rock star of this date. And like, he was my idol, 100%. So anyways, yeah, we went over to the Condo Oval and watched his concert. There was about 15 singers before him, and then he played four songs and jumped off stage. But I tell you what, I love that bloke, and I've watched him live about six times now. Whenever I can't find something to play, I always turn back to the old Knowlesy albums from when I was at 2007.
Cyril, another epic story, which is why I'm scared to finish, but I have to, because other lucky podcasters are going to get the chance to hear them from you, or all the hundreds of radio shows it seems like you're doing. So I'm going to call it here on this episode of Tall Poppy Talk, but just so enthusiastically thank you, because you're such a cool person and like smashing it.
Thanks, Grace. I really appreciate your time, mate. I really enjoyed this. This was fun.